What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative, and we are here once again. It is auction talk. I got my man Nick at the Wharf Sports Cards back on the program. This is becoming the most talked about show that we're doing every week. The feedback has been amazing. I'm really enjoying recording these, talking through the players, the athletes, the cards. It has been a lot of fun. And like we have been in the past, we cover a ton of ground. If you like what we're doing over here, the best way you can show your support, go holla at my man, Nick. If you need a consignment, use him, promo code STACKING50, $50 off your first consignment with the Wharf Sports Cards. I hope you like these conversations. I enjoy having them, and I think Nick is bringing a ton of value and a ton of energy to the world of auctions. So let's sit back, relax, and kick into the conversation. We are back. It is time to talk auctions. I've got my man Nick at the Wharf Sports Cards, and we are... Every week, man, I look at the agenda and what we want to talk about, and there's a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot that's happening around us in the world of sports. First of all, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going well, man. Just got my morning workout in, got my Monday started off right, so I'm feeling good. Ready to jump into this conversation and see if we can keep it under an hour and a half. But once we get going, man, it's just we have too much fun, and it's like. It goes quick for sure.
What's the workout? What do you do to get fit?
You could probably relate. Like, I've got two little kids, right? My wife stays home with the kids. So it's like, you got to be efficient with your workout at this point in my life. So luckily we live like a mile from the gym. So I walk to the gym because it's like the only chance I really get to walk, and it's a good little warm up. And then I just alternate days. Like, I go Monday through Friday, and I'll go legs Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'll go, you know, upper body Tuesday, Thursday. Just like, I like to lift, you know, that's what I prefer. And then my walking, I just chalk it up as heart health cardio, but it's all about efficiency, man. I get in there, I do like three things, try to superset them all. Like, I walk there, do my workout, and walk back all in like 35 minutes. So
I think about COVID before I had kids, and I do some lifting, but primarily a runner. And I just look at like my runs back then in pre-kids. It was like, you know, I go on these 8-9 mile excursions like three times a week. And now it's like, I'm under the gun before they wake up. So it's like, if I can get 35 minutes in the morning, like, that's a good morning to me. But yeah, kids will change you. That's for sure. But as long as you're still making the effort, that's what matters most.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, a win for me now is all like, if I get there, then it's a win. Like, it's not about like, how long can I be there? It's like, if I can get there and do something, I feel good.
As we're recording this, I talked to you like, I'm trying to get like a million things done before we head out of town for a few days. So I haven't like gotten a chance, which I normally do a good job of like prepping, but I haven't gotten a chance to see like any results of auctions closing last night. So like, this will be all new information to me. Maybe based on some auctions we talked about last time, how did they shape up? What are we looking at?
Yeah. So, I'll talk about the five cards that we talked about, and kind of touch on each, but overall for the auction, like, we, for our consignments, we sold 81 cards. We consigned 81 cards. They did $39,314. So it was an average sale of a little over $485. So like, consignments are definitely trickling in. We're definitely noticing an uptick. Like, we already have 90 something scheduled or that are live right now. I think there's like 75 scheduled for Thursday that'll go live. So we're finally hitting a rhythm. People are using that Stacking 50 promo code. So we're happy to see that. Got some new people in the door, trying out the service and enjoying it. So that's encouraging. But yeah, let's just dive into the five cards. So we had the Brady, the 2009 Bowman Chrome Red Refractor at a 5 PSA 8. It did $2,760, which was lower than I anticipated, honestly. But when I look back at the sales, three copies of that card have sold in the last year. Of that parallel. So, I mean, if it's an out of five parallel, you've seen three copies in the last year, like, each sale has subsequently gone down. It makes sense, right? Like, it just is what it is when super rare cards surface that frequently. So looking back, probably where it should have been. I think I just over anticipated what it would do. But it makes me think of like, Brady non-rookie refractors have kind of been down overall in general, honestly, for a while now. And it makes me wonder, I'm just curious to see which non-rookie parallels and inserts of his end up really mattering with collectors, because there is a lot of them, right? I think this is a unique parallel. There's only 4 years that Bowman Chrome made the red out of five for football. But when you lump it into all Brady non-refractors, like, how important is it? Well, you know what I mean? We'll find out.
On that note, I wrestle with this as a collector a lot, especially when I'm like thinking about like higher dollar cards that I want to go after. And we talked about that card last time, but just like the balance between a parallel, like a red with that's out of five with maybe like, is this something like, to me, I look at that card and I'm like, man, there's only five copies, but like, then there's this perception that maybe people just don't care about a red parallel, even though that it's out of five copies. Mm-hmm. That's something I'm constantly battling with, where I think I'm like a lot of collectors who likes gold stuff. But then if you look back, that's why I like gold prism, because there's only 10 copies. But if you go back and you're trying to figure out which refractors matter, like there's 50 copies in gold prism. So it's more of it, or gold refractor. So it's more available. So I don't know, like I'm constantly trying to battle that, like in terms of like importance and what like really will matter long term. And it's nearly impossible to figure it out. But I think that's just a topic that's always on my mind.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's kind of ever evolving, right? Like we all kind of, I feel like the hobby kind of changes their mind as we go on what cards are important. So maybe it's a card that's just going to kind of be in that ebb and flow where it quiets down for people for a while, and then people sort of rediscover it and get excited about it again. So, but I'm with you, man. I have those cards all over the place, and it's just something that I like to follow and kind of see what the hobby is telling me by how those cards are performing at auction when they surface. So, the next one is the 2019 Moss Impeccable, the stat breakers where he had the 23 touchdowns with the auto. It did $300, which I think is exactly what it did in January. So right in line with last sales, super cool card. The 2020 Topps Chrome UEFA hobby case did $2,400, which is down from the last sale, but the last three sales of that have been down 20-30% each time. So I think that buy could be a good buy once the World Cup comes back around. $2,400 for that case. A lot of those rookies in that class are going to be playing in the World Cup for the first time if all things go well for them. So I'm curious to see where that case is selling in, you know, like a year and a half when we get closer to the World Cup. The Luka and Trey courtside silver PSA 10 rookies, $4,200 for the Luka, which is the highest that card has sold in the last six sales of that card. He just went crazy on my Nuggets yesterday. And Kyrie, like, what?
How about that? How about the game winner?
Like, Kareem
didn't Abdul look real. Ball,
like that was like a college three-point left-handed hook over Jokic at the buzzer, and he just drained it. Like, it looked like he does that like multiple times a game. It was insane. But that the Luka did $4,200, the Trey did $456, so almost a 10x multiplier, which is nuts. It makes me wonder, like, is Trey a good value buy? I mean, like, for people playing that game, it makes me wonder, because you got to think at some point something has to give with his situation, whether they finally bring in like other players to Atlanta, or probably the more realistic thing is that he gets traded to a bigger market team and becomes kind of more of a second option type of guy. But man, $456 for a card like that of Trey, like if I was gambling on something, I think that's a low risk, high reward gamble right there. And then the last one is the SP game used, the Tiger, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Justin Thomas quad patch. It did $300, which I thought was a really fair value. A PSA 10 did $510 in March 2022. So card that just doesn't surface often. I feel like it's always probably going to be a $300 to $600 card, depending on quality of the patches and the quality of the card itself. So
what's interesting about the Trey and Luka comparison, and these two will always be connected at some level just based on the draft. But I think about the gap between those two sales. And of course, I know the Luka is going to sell for a lot more, that much more. That's surprising to me. And to me, it goes to, is it because Luka is broke this triple double record of, you know, 35 points or 35 points, whatever it was, more. And he's just playing out of his absolute mind. Is it because Trey is out of the picture because he's hurt? I don't know. Like, I find I'm fascinated by like these trends in the immediate and then also just longer term. I think it's undeniable that like, the hobby's always been more confident with Luka over Trey, but it just seems like the gap is broadening with each and every year. And it's just like, I hate to say it, but you look at just the situation in Atlanta and you alluded to it. It's just not as exciting as what could be in Dallas for Luka. So just something just in terms of like monitoring what's happening in sports in real time with card prices and card value that I don't typically get to talk about too much, but there was an opening there based on these auction updates. And I thought it'd be a good time to comment.
No, I absolutely agree. And if you look, like if you play the whole, you know, you look at the multipliers and see kind of like what was the gap before? What is it now? Is it significantly changed? Like that card, like a few months ago was selling for around 3,600 for Luka and it was selling for around 600 for Trey. So it was like a 6X multiplier. It's now a 10X multiplier. So again, like if you're playing that whole, you know, buy low, sell high, gamble type of thing, like hoping something happens with Trey or whatever, like the odds and multipliers there, I feel like are stacking in favor of making Trey look like a good buy. Cause you got to think of what something has to change for either one of their prices to change. Right. And I think it's logical prediction to say something is going to happen. Something is going to change with Trey's situation.
I think that is accurate. There's already where there's smoke, there is fire, and there's already been a lot of smoke. So maybe digging into changing lanes and moving into another topic, we have talked a lot about Bowman University on the show and just college cards. And it's just like every week something goes on where it's like, all right, let's talk about college cards. And you know what? It's appropriate, right? It's like March Madness. The brackets just came out. I was doing some digging in Card Ladder just based on I was like, all right, let's try to get analytical around this. Let's see like if college cards are like what kind of impact that they're having. And this stuck out to me is that I just did a filter. I just typed in Bowman University and I did a filter by $1,000 or more. Try to see how many cards have sold this year, $1,000 or more, Bowman University. And there was 366 cards that populated. And like that stood out to me. And yes, like Caitlin Clark's in that mix in population and like Victor Wembanyama's in that population just based on him being. But like as I dug in like layers or two below, there's just a lot of like super fractors of college players. A lot. And it just I did the same comparison like a year prior. And granted, the volume of Bowman University selection wasn't as populous as then, but like it was like a sliver of that. So I don't know. I just think like when there is something that people maybe haven't hit on in a while or have wanted to, but just haven't connected with a specific product. And now that they see, they can compare like a Bowman University with like a, maybe a Bowman's draft picks that people start to compare the two things in their mind. That's just something that I wanted to call out just in terms of like college cards have been a topic that we've talked about a lot and they're more available and people just seem like they're getting more excited about them. And then the actual like dollars in the volume of sales, especially in that like upper tier category, speak for itself.
Yeah. I think I talked about this before. I think there's a lot of opportunity with these cards. I think if you look at it, like Caitlin Clark, like some of these football players, especially with these NIL deals, like they're staying in college longer than before. And it gives you an opportunity to collect these players before their professional careers. Like the other college cards that come out, it's usually right when they're drafted professionally. So you're already thinking of like Caitlin Clark in a Fever uniform, right? And then more of her Iowa cards come out, right? But these Bowman Chrome U's are coming out, most of them, you know, the Wembanyama is a different story, but like the Caitlin Clarks, the football ones, like the Caleb Williams, the Marvin Harrisons, like they're all coming out while they're playing in college. It gives you something to collect before they turn pro. It's a much more affordable price point compared to their pro cards, right? Like a Wembanyama, you know, his black Prism 101 that's going to sell is going to sell for way more than his Bowman Chrome Superfractor did, just because it's his best pro card, not his best, you know, pre-pro card. So I think there's a lot of layers to it. And like, I mean, I think there's opportunity. Like I look at college football, like Shador Sanders, Travis Hunter, like guys that had a Bowman Chrome U card last year that are coming back to college. Like you can now prospect on college players while they're in college, and it's way cheaper than professional cards. So I think it adds another layer for people to participate in and get excited about. Like it makes me more excited about college football. Like I bought some cheaper receivers and running backs and stuff, and it makes me want to watch their games or at least keep up with their stats and scores if I can't catch the game. So I think there's a lot of layers of excitement to it.
I always just like try to get a pulse from people going to shows, and there's been a few videos and conversations I've had with people that have just said, like, you know, these cards are in showcases and these cards are selling on the show floor, which is always a good indication of interest. Now, how long that interest sustains, we will see, but it seems like there's some momentum there. I'm just curious, like college cards. And I'm like, the way a lot of the content that I've been putting out there recently have centered around these like lower tier sports getting some traction and reasons why. Is there like, we've talked a lot about them just in the cards we've shared, whether it's wrestling, women's basketball, golf, but is there like anything like outside of the main sports in those lanes of maybe lower tier or emerging category that you've seen just on the consignment side of people just like either interested in buying more or people sending you cards of something that's not like maybe basketball, football, baseball, or hockey?
Yeah, I would say usually soccer is next, especially, you know, more lately gearing up for the World Cup, like have more people asking about soccer cards and even sending in soccer cards. Surprisingly, golf is there's a decent collector base of golf cards. But really after that, wrestling a lot, obviously, like you've sent in some wrestling cards. I think that community has been pretty, consistent with, activity in the last probably couple of years, really. So not really an emerging market, but, you know, a market that's had interest for a while now. So I think, you know, but I think it comes back to like price point, in my opinion. I think it's just people want the coolest cards, right? And if you can't buy a gold prism of your favorite basketball player because it's, you know, $15,000, well, you might be able to buy a gold prism of your favorite golfer. I mean, I know there's not gold prism golf yet. There's going to be for the LIV tour, but, you know, wrestling, right? They have gold prisms. You might be able to afford your favorite wrestler for a fifth of the price or a tenth of the price. I don't know what those differences are, but I think that's just what it comes down to. People like specific cards and parallels and can't always afford their favorite player from their biggest sport. So they look to their other sports that they follow.
No doubt about it. Moving over into the world of sports, we mentioned March Madness is this week. Curious, like, are you a big March Madness guy? Do you get into it? Then do you watch all the games? Like, what will you be doing this week when the games come on?
It's funny, man. When we had our first kid, we had her, she was born March 6th. So she was like a newborn during March Madness. And that sleep with your first kid is like insane, right? We did the whole like shifts thing where my wife would, you know, stay. I think I stayed up with her until like 1, and then we switched and my wife would stay up with her from like 1 to 5. So I got to watch like so much March Madness our first year. I mean, the most March Madness I ever watched in my life, like all these games that are ending at like 12 o'clock that I wouldn't watch before, I was watching all of them. So it was great. But then ever since then, I've probably watched the least March Madness I've ever watched because you get so busy with just the kids and what they're doing, and they go to bed early. And usually, you know, it's like I'm in bed with them, you know, for whatever reasons, early. So don't get to catch a lot of those games, but I always now that I'm a business owner, I work from home. I try to have those day games on early in the tournament, like this Thursday and Friday, like hopefully I'll have the computer out in the living room, games on in the background all day, just kind of, you know, checking in as they go. But the first 2 days are the most exciting for me, just seeing those teams. Schools I've never even heard of, you know, competing with the big schools or even upsetting the big schools. But what about you?
Same. It's like I could totally relate to everything you just said. I'm way more of a college football fan than I am a college basketball fan, but I do enjoy the tournament, especially it's hard to beat like the first week. There's so many upsets and things that pop off. And I know you wanted to talk about upsets, but like maybe like let's like put this out in the world and see if it happens. Like what's an upset you're thinking about?
I'm going James Madison over Wisconsin. I like the 5-12 matchups. I feel like you're always good for one 12 over 5 upset in the tournament. Wisconsin's always one of those teams where it's like you never know what you're going to get from them. They're always like a solid regular season team, and then tournament time comes and it's like they're going to bow out early or they're going to make a Final Four run. I feel like there's not really an in between with them. So James Madison, I know they beat Michigan State early on. They won over 30 games. I know their conference, you know, isn't the biggest, greatest conference, but I don't know. I think they're a team that could upset Wisconsin.
I like it. I'll be watching that, especially now. We'll hold you accountable. I'll throw one out there just because I'll get judged just like you. And I will say this, I really, with all of my heart, because I've got a group chat and I've got a hardcore Purdue fan who just spams the chat with Purdue content. And I'm like, dude, I don't care. Dude, I don't care. They haven't done anything in the tournament. I really want to just pick like Montana State or Grambling, whichever team it'll be. But yes. I'm not going if they drew the St. Peter's Peacocks. I mean, I would go that way, but I was just like scanning it and like, I don't follow. I'd be a liar to say I follow NCAA basketball as closely as I do a bunch of other sports, but just from a historical perspective, I'm going to take McNeese State, who's a 12, to take down Gonzaga, just because there's always a 12 that takes down a 5. McNeese State, 30, they've lost 3 games. Seems like Gonzaga, this is all narrative and historical stuff, but it just seems like Gonzaga always loses in the tournament when they shouldn't. So sorry, Gonzaga fans. I'm picking McNeese State, and you can all jump in my DMs and make fun of me when I'm wrong, but I have to pick one, you know?
I would love that because I believe Kansas plays the winner of that game. If Kansas wins, I think it's the winner of that game, or maybe it's 2 games later.
Yes, it is.
It's the winner of that game.
Yeah. It looks like
yeah.
It.
Yeah. So I would love a Kansas McNeese State second round matchup because this year's Jayhawks team is a complete wild. Like, I could see them losing in the first round. It would not surprise me at all. They've been getting blown out lately. But usually come tournament time, they show up a little bit more. But, yeah, McNeese over Gonzaga, I like it.
So I was walking into the Pacers game with my wife, and I literally looked down at my phone. And right when I pulled up the phone, like when I got through the security, did all the things, we had a rare date night, went with friends to the Pacers game. They won by 21 against the Nets. It was awesome. But I looked down at my phone as we were like, you know, walking in, getting ready to go up the steps, and I got the notification. And the notification was Justin Fields had been traded and to the Steelers. And dude, like, first of all, like, I have no dog in the race, but the amount of I don't know if I can ever remember a player that has been talked about more in an offseason than Justin Fields. And, you know, it divided the fan base in Chicago. People saying why they should trade him, why they shouldn't. And it literally flooded my feeds. And for whatever reason, like, I became involved in, like, what the outcome of this. So when that happened, I was like, I'm glad it's finally over. So hopefully I don't have to hear about it as much as I had been for the last, like, you know, 2 or 3 months. But then my next reaction, we were talking about Russell Wilson last week and the Steelers, was like, huh, like, I didn't have that on my bingo card. But the more as I've begun to process it, I'm like, maybe that does make a lot of sense for Pittsburgh. So What was going on in your head? What do you think? And also, too, like, what about, obviously, I think it's Caleb Williams to Chicago now. So what do you think about the trade?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I agree with your last point there. It kind of made the Russell Wilson signing make more sense, actually, that they gave him a one-year deal. I think he could be a great mentor for Justin Fields if they're going to go that route. The reports say that Fields is not going to compete for the starting job, like, coming into camp. I mean, that could all change once they're in training camp and, you know, if Fields is performing better or anything like that. But I think it could be good for Fields to kind of be pushed again. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like he didn't get a really fair shake in Chicago. I don't feel like he was bad. I mean, he had some injuries. They improved year over year. He had some moments where he looked really good. I think his accuracy was a little bit inconsistent, and maybe he, you know, took off running a little bit quicker than he should sometimes. But like, you know, that threat is a real thing. Like, look at Lamar Jackson. You know, when you have somebody that can just take off at any time and get you 10 yards, like, you have the game plan completely different. So I think to pin it on him for not being, you know, the thing that's going to get them over the hump, I think is unfair. Like, they have a lot of holes on that roster still. I think it was probably more about cap space, right? They're going to have to pay him in a year or two with his rookie contract coming up. So it's probably just a chance for them to kind of reset the salary at the QB position and build around that for the next couple of years and hope that Caleb Williams is at least as good as Justin Fields is or was going to be. Then it'll be a win for Chicago. But I'm curious to see what happens in Pittsburgh. I mean, I wonder what people invested in Justin Fields' cards are going to do, because you can look at that 1 year contract and just say, okay, well, maybe he takes over halfway through. Maybe he does just not play this year. And then the next year he comes out and he's a starter and I'll just hold my cards until then. But I hope last week I said, I hope Russell can kind of like rewrite the end of his legacy. I hope the same thing happens for Fields. I hope this is kind of like a way for him to reset and kind of reevaluate what he brings to the table and what he needs to bring to the table. And hopefully both of them end up better because of this. But I feel like it was a great move for the Steelers. They only gave up like a fifth and sixth round pick. I think they swapped picks. It was a weird trade. Like, I feel like they didn't give anything up to get him. And he was just the number one pick 2 years ago, 3 years ago, which is insane.
Yeah, I think the Bears had zero leverage, especially when you come out at the combine and they let everybody know that you're trying to get rid of them, like, you lose all your leverage. So I think people are like, oh, you got nothing from Chicago. It's like, well, like, just look at everything that's been said publicly. Like, there was zero leverage. Mm-hmm. And so, and I also think like the appetite of him as a starter wasn't there. Maybe what they thought it was for that moment, like, the quarterback positions were filled and the ones you hadn't filled, like, have the draft position and want to draft their own guy. So my perspective of this is back to what we were talking about with Russ. It's like, one thing I can tell you about Pittsburgh and Tomlin is just like, it's a steady ship. It's consistent. And I think one thing Fields hasn't been able to prove to do is win games consistently, but Pittsburgh is a culture of winning consistently. So it might not be this year. Maybe he'll get a look here or there, but like, I don't know. I love the situation for him long-term. I think it's a place where it's like, it's going to be like a sink or swim in the culture, the way the defense is structured. I like the situation. It just might not happen this year. You might have to wait a little bit, but shrewd move from Pittsburgh. I think coming out based on the quarterback room that you had last year to now you've got Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, like things are looking up in that room and things got a lot better.
100%. I agree with all those points. And then one other thing, like kind of under the radar, the Bears just traded for Keenan Allen like last week or a few days ago. So, I mean, they just added Keenan Allen to DJ Moore. Like, that's a heck of a 1-2 wide receiver combo. So Caleb Williams is going to come into a nice situation there, at least with wide receiver weapons when he gets into Chicago.
Yes, it's landing in a very good spot. We made mention of the Stacking 50 promo code. If you want to consign your cards, hit up Nick. We'll put the link in the show notes. Use that promo code, $50 off your first purchase, our first consignment, excuse me. Let's talk a little bit about no recent comps. I love that whenever when the newsletter hits, I'm usually like in round one of my shift as a parent, and I'm on Saturday morning and like I'm checking my emails and that hits and like I get a chance to just like read it on my phone while my kid's eating breakfast, which I always really enjoy it. But maybe something from the newsletter this week that you want to go deeper on or talk a little bit more about.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because that's why I targeted Saturday mornings, because I feel like it's a lot of us are in the same spot where it's like we that Saturday morning we kind of had that like chance to have coffee, or you know, our kids are watching cartoons, or you know, whatever stage of life we are, it's kind of easy to kind of check that phone real quick Saturday morning and get some card content in you before the weekend starts. So I'm glad that resonated with you the way I was hoping it would. But yeah, this week we talked about, so in the No Recent Comps online community, I switched up one of the segments of the newsletter from Question I'm Pondering to Ask Me Anything. Same concept, but I'm going to pull questions from my community and pick one each week and answer it in the newsletter. So I did that this week. And one of the community members, Will, asked a really good question. I'll read it verbatim here. It was, so as you've discovered, time between auction sales helps create an increased value, but does listing a rare card during that time for buy it now hurt that intrinsic value since it makes it seem more readily available than it truly is? So I thought that was a really awesome question, thoughtful question. And I answered that thoroughly in the newsletter, so you can check it out there. I want to add to it here, though. So it got me thinking more, and I wanted to think of some examples. And I know you're going to talk about one of these cards later. So it's funny. I saw that after I did this. So we're gonna hit this card twice, which I'm great with because it's an awesome card. But it made me think of examples. Like, I think it's important when cards aren't seen as available. Like when you don't see a card for sale anywhere online, you don't see people posting it for sale on their Instagram, it makes you think it's a harder to get card, right? That's the scarcity versus the rarity, is how hard is it to actually get that rare card. And one example that just sticks out to me, because we're selling one, full disclosure, I actually just bought one because I think it's a good time to buy one, and it's my favorite set of football cards. But the 1996 Select Certified Mirror Gold Parallel. I think it's maybe the most important 90s parallel there is. I think that's a whole other argument. But the Barry Sanders. Barry is usually the top guy in 90s football cards. If he's in the product, he's usually the most sought after player outside of 98, which is Manning and Moss's rookie years. A lot of times, you know, they'll sell for more in the 98 sets. But PSA 8 just sold that card on Golden. And that card has actually sold. We're selling a BGS 8.5 this week. It's on PWCC now. That'll be the sixth copy of that card to sell in the last year. It sells for, you know, give or take around $2,000, depending on the grade. If you look at the baseball version of that card, Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, Derek Jeter, it's a totally different story. So I just told you the Barry Sanders has sold six times in the last year after this BGS 8.5 sells this week. We have not seen a Griffey sell publicly since 2008. Not one single one in 16 years. If it sold today, it would probably be a six-figure card. The Barry Sanders, the best guy in the football set, is a $2,000 card. The last Bonds to sell was in 2020. I didn't see any public sales before that. It might have just been where the data didn't go back far enough, but only one since 2020. The Jeter has sold twice since 2020. And that one, I believe, is a six-figure card. It was one of those sales, was like heavy six figures. It might have been a PSA 10, though, but that's a huge, huge card. Like, the multiplier from the baseball set to the football set is huge, and it doesn't make any sense to me, but I think a big part of it is because you literally never see the big baseball players from that set surface publicly. And right now we're seeing a cycle where a lot of the big guys from the football set are selling over and over. And there's three buy it now Barry Sanders golds on eBay right now as well. So like, it doesn't look like the card print run is 35, but it doesn't look like it's only 35 copies of that card if you just go off of how frequently it's sold and how there's three available right now on eBay.
That is, so I'm going to save a little bit because we're going to talk about it more in a minute, but that's super fascinating. I think that's crazy about the Griffey. I would imagine, just because I know his audience is insane, that if that card became available, that would be like appointment viewing, get your popcorn ready. That's fun. And we're going to go back to that card here in a minute, which there was no planning about it. It just, we just pick our cards, and I was looking, I'm like, this card I want to talk about. So revisit it in a minute. Let's talk about maybe No Recent Comps, anything that sold that you want to talk about.
Yeah. So everything in this last issue that was on Saturday sold last night. They just happened to all end on Sunday. But one of the cards that stuck out was the 2018 Exquisite Limited Logos Derrick Rose RPA out of 25. It was a BGS 9. It sold for $4,650, which, pretty big number for a guy like Derrick Rose, right? Like, he gives a lot of people a lot of nostalgia. Like, super hot start to his career. Won an MVP. When he won his MVP, it was the youngest MVP ever. Like the trajectory he was on was exciting, especially for Bulls fans who hadn't had anything since Jordan to really be excited about, and haven't had anything since then to be excited about. So it's interesting to me to see like how strong Derrick Rose cards still sell for. That card sold last for, I think, the last BGS 9 to sell was in 2016, and it did $631. A Raw sold since then for $1,126 in March 2021. Still like a 4X, you know, sale over that 3 years later. Obviously, this is a graded copy versus a non-graded copy, but I think that's a very big number for a guy like Rose. And I get excited about a guy like Rose, you know, being from Illinois and watching him in his prime when he was healthy was a special thing. And I think it's interesting that his prices still sell like that while he's still kind of like in that phase of his career where he's hanging on, but not really relevant. Like a lot of people just tank at this point in their career, and then they kind of, you know, resurge years after they retire. So I'm curious kind of what happens to him in 7 years, 10 years. I wonder what people will, how they'll react to his cards, you know, at that point.
Yeah, I think I saw just the graphic come through that he officially announced his retirement this last week. Is that correct?
That could be. I was going to ask. I don't even know if he was rostered this year at all. I think at the beginning he was, right? Maybe with Memphis or something like that.
Yeah, I lost touch with it, but I know he announced his retirement. But Rose is super fascinating because I think when people and he had his plenty of moments post Chicago Bulls, like he had a hell of a career. But everyone's likely to remember him for the youngest MVP season in Chicago and just him being from Chicago and just he's beloved. I mean, I don't want to speak for Bulls fans, but I know he's beloved for Bulls fans just from the ones I know. So I think about him. And I think about like he's a what could have been type of a player. And a lot like I look at a Derrick Rose and I think about like an Andrew Luck from my perspective. And it's there's a lot of similarities and parallels. Think about a Penny Hardaway. You want to go back a little bit. These guys that in that moment in time literally captivated the hearts and minds of an entire fan base in a way that it was unique and special. And to be honest with you, like, I don't care if they never ended up winning the championships that they should have been, this and that. That's collectability. Like, when you can trigger those moments that make you really happy deep down inside, like, that triggers collectability. It's part of the reason why, like, I collect Luck so proudly is just because those moments when I walked to the stadium and got to watch him play when he played, I was at a certain point in my life where I was older and more mature as a fan, and it was just magical. And like, regardless of how it ended, those moments I'll never shake. And so I want to express those moments in my collecting. And back to Derrick Rose, I would imagine just based on the Instagram posts and just his sentiment still being alive in the hobby, I would imagine there's a lot of people that feel that way about Rose, if not more. So he's on the list of players, and we should build out a list of these players at some point because there's a lot of them. But I would imagine if you're into Derrick Rose and you've got a big collection of his cards, just because he didn't end up doing what everyone thought he would be doesn't necessarily mean that those cards that you have in your PC won't hold any value over time. My guess is, as the years pass, they'll probably go up in value just based on how I think the hobby works long time. But again, that's just speculation.
No, I think that's well said. And it makes sense that they would continue to go up for those reasons that you mentioned. And one thing I was thinking about as we were both just kind of talking there and listening to you, like, brought up Penny Hardaway. And I think something that helped Penny Hardaway and helped Derrick Rose is the era that they were kind of at their primes in, right? Like Penny was in his prime in the Jordan era and literally took down, they were the last team to beat, they're the only team to beat Jordan in the playoffs. Like it was when he came back, you know, number 45 Jordan, it was that year. But I think that matters with people, and it was an exciting era of basketball. And Derrick Rose was going toe to toe with LeBron James in his prime, right? Those Heat teams, I mean, they were they were taking them 6-7 games every time they matched up in the finals. And Derrick Rose was having some incredible games in those series. So I think those moments and when they happened and who they happened against also kind of stick with people as well.
All right, let's just jump. We've got, well, let's see, we're doing pretty good on timing. Not terrible. Let's see how if we can get through this. And but people love, I get the feedback, people like the long episodes. And it's like, if you want a long episode, listen to Auction Talk every week, you're going to be fine. We'll try to do whatever we can to fill all your auction needs. But I'm sharing my screen. If you're in on the Patreon, you can see this. First card, wrestling card. It's WrestleMania season. I got to plug wrestling cards. Shout out to all you wrestling card degens. And this is my guy. Although, the reason why I wanted to talk about this, it's not necessarily my card, but it's my guy. So the card is the 2022 Prism WWE Roman Reigns Champion Signatures Gold Prism out of 10, PSA 8, auto 10, out of the debut flagship Prism set. And starting here, like looking back, I don't know if like the auction we referenced a while ago with Combat Wrestling, that was just insane. Like that was one of the best collections of wrestling cards I had ever seen. This one had like we haven't got back up to that point from a marketplace perspective, but this card certainly caught my eye. This is hard because Roman Reigns, I collect him, and there's a disclaimer, and he's my favorite wrestler of all time. And he's entering headlining his eighth WrestleMania, which that ties Hulk Hogan for most headline WrestleManias of all time, which is significant. And this card, this would be an autograph insert from the first product and gold. And he's standing, he's looking just right at you, holding the Universal title. And I don't know, like, I have no idea what the expectation on this card is going to be, like where it's going to go. And that's why I'm like, I'll be following it. I will not be bidding on it. And I don't know, like, I've just tried to be more focused in on what I collect when it comes to wrestling, and just not a big, like, sticker auto guy, not necessarily a big kind of like insert guy. So like, although it is gold, it is a sharp looking card. But I don't know, I picked this card because it's WrestleMania season. And I try to describe, like, there's a moment to like tell people, like, why do I collect Roman Reigns? Like, I think about just like being a wrestling fan and all of the generations and of being a wrestling fan and all the guys you can pick from. And something about him and his character has resonated with me in a way that no one else has. And in a time where the company wanted him to be popular and be the top guy, fans revolted. And I was like one of the only guys that was sitting there cheering for him. And then he evolved into this new character where his career took off in big heights. And I don't know, when I think about wrestling cards and getting back into them in this era of my life, like one of my primary PCs is Roman Reigns. So it's WrestleMania season. People are getting fired up. The Rock has been everywhere, cutting promos on X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And he's literally been on screen on SmackDown every Friday night, kind of ushering in this new era. But I don't know, like I did a look back too on wrestling cards, and I'm publishing it this week in the Patreon group, of like the last 3 years, like what does from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania and that buildup do for wrestling cards? And there's some interesting data in there that I have found just in terms of volume of sales. So for all you wrestling card fans who say, hey, why aren't you talking about wrestling cards anymore? Here you go. Here's some wrestling card content. But Nick, I know you're not like a big wrestling card guy, but like a lot of wrestling cards come your way. So I don't know if there's anything here that you want to touch on, thoughts, reaction just on wrestling card market in general.
Yeah. I mean, that's an awesome card. Like it, you know, just the champion insert, like, I mean, I just looking at it and not knowing a ton about the wrestling card market, like it feels like it would be a significant insert. Feels like it would have to be limited to right to just champion. So, I mean, a limited checklist, I think, is always a good thing. And like when you think of wrestling champions right now, like you probably think of Roman Reigns. So I'm curious, you mentioned you were looking at the data from Rumble to WrestleMania. Is it similar to other sports where like more people will start to sell on the build up to WrestleMania, kind of like they would in like the preseason of football or something like that? Is it the same sort of cycle?
So here's a snapshot. And basically I'm going to let people know, like, if you like this type of content, go check out my group, because this is what I'm delivering. Mm-hmm. In 22, there was, I don't have the number in front of me, but let's just say in 22, there was 300 sales of wrestling cards from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania, which is a 2-month time frame, that sold for $300 or above. Let's say there's 300. The next year, 23, that number doubled in 1 year. So it helped indicate to, it pointed me in the direction that, wow, in 1 year time frame, there was so much momentum around wrestling cards that, like, in that 2 month snapshot, there's double the sales, which I think what it means to me ultimately, and we're still, I will say we're on pace this year in the same time frame to blow that number out of the water too. So I think what it tells me is that the market, there are more people interested in wrestling cards and the market is more confident in spending more money in wrestling cards because they're seeing sales like the $9,000 The Rock gold prison sale that sold a few weeks ago. And so it's still growing. And what I've liked about wrestling cards post like pandemic, or not pandemic boom, but debut prison boom, is that the growth has been great. It's been incremental growth just across the board, as opposed to like these big fluctuations, which I think is really cool. I always liken it to this, like you can't get into wrestling cards and just jump, come in and try to just flip them if you don't care or give a shit about them, because it's just not going to work that way. But if you like, if wrestling cards give you some sort of nostalgia and you enjoy them, like, it is a really fun space to play in. And I can tell you the cards that I always have to sell wrestling cards because I'm always trying to get more wrestling cards. And the cards that I have sold this year on the wrestling card side have, most all of them have done better than what I anticipated or what I bought them for like a year or 2 years prior, which is always a good signal to me.
I love it, man. Yeah. I've been hearing more about WrestleMania. I think, you know, The Rock being involved probably helps that, but I might have to tune in or catch. I will fully admit I do catch the recaps of the big, like the Royal Rumble. I was reading the recap. WrestleMania, I'll read the recap. But man, I used to get the pay-per-views back in the day. Like I was in it. The Rock was one of my guys. So it does feel like there's a lot more buzz about wrestling cards, at least, you know, right now with where we're at in the wrestling cycle.
Next card for me. This card, I don't know how I found it. I stumbled across it somehow on eBay, but it is a triple auto. Caitlin Clark is getting mentioned every time. And I think it's just deal with it, everybody. She's going to be in my city. Just deal with it. Like, you don't like it? Come on. It's Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Paige Buchers, 23-24, Bowman's best, triple auto, red out of 25. I just think about everybody on this card. You, first of all, Paige or Caitlin and Angel Reese, like there's history there. But like when I think about like the best, best college female players, like these are certainly three of the best. Five copies of this red parallel out of, you know, Bowman U. This card has 6 days, 9 hours as we record this. There's 34 bids and it's already at $1,475. I can't imagine in a pre Caitlin Clark world, like a card, like pre her being doing what she's doing, a women's basketball card to have this much interest. So that card just, it stood out to me because I hadn't seen anything like it. And again, it's not just men's tournament time, it's women's tournament time too. So whoever is, I don't know if the lister is a consigner or not, but whoever's selling this card, whether it's the person listing it or whatever, their timing's pretty good because I would imagine this would be a pretty fun sale. But what was going on in your head when you saw it?
Well, I mean, I think like you said, when people think of women's college basketball, like these three names have to be three of the top names that they think of. Like obviously Caitlin Clark, I think Angel Reese, people just know about. And then Paige, man, like Paige was, I knew about Paige before I knew about Caitlin. Like when Paige was coming out of high school, she was highly touted and she was skilled. Her freshman year, she played really well. I think it was her freshman year where she tore her ACL. It might've been her sophomore year. And then Caitlin kind of emerged and kind of like, you know, stole the spotlight, but Paige is a stud. I mean, I love watching her play too. Apparently they were on the same AAU team growing up too, which is insane to think about.
And I found out that Caitlin Clark was supposed to, or thought she was going to UConn.
To UConn.
Which is crazy.
I'm glad she did not, man. There was, like, remember that stretch when UConn was just always undefeated? Like, they just, it was just like they won every national championship and always went undefeated. It was
Geno, man.
Geno, yeah, there was no parity. But now that, you know, the NIL deals have come along, I don't know really what has changed it, but there's a lot more parity in women's college basketball, which I think makes for a better product. But yeah, this is a sweet card, and I'm definitely excited for the women's tournament coming up.
So the last card that I picked that there was no organized planning around was this 96 Select Certified Mirror Gold. So I guess that says, because I picked this card, Nick was talking about it, there's definitely a cool factor of it. It's always cool to talk about Barry Sanders and just the career. What's amazed me in getting into cards is just how strong his collector base is. It's funny. It's like two Lions guys, Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson, like the strongest collector bases possible. Like if their rare cards come up, like people are after it. But we've covered a lot of ground on this card. The one thing that I wanted to bring up to you was, and for me, it took education from other collectors and then me digging in and researching and confirming that in like blowout forum threads and stuff. But you mentioned like there's 35 copies of this card, but this card isn't like serial numbered. So I don't know, like, how do you think that impacts the value where there's these like SP cards where there's like, this is how many there are based on like tribal knowledge getting passed down. But like, what do you think that does for this card? Because I was looking at maybe a Marvin Harrison a long time ago, and I don't think I pulled the trigger because I was like, I don't know enough about this card and how many are actually printed.
It's funny you mentioned that, because one of the cards that I'm going to talk about later that we're consigning is sort of the opposite of this card. And I think it's important because it is serial numbered. So we'll talk about that when I get to that, but I think it's important, man. I think especially on a card like this in a set like this, where the people that know about this set, like they know how important it is. I mean, I hope I'm not stealing your thunder here, but this is the original rainbow parallel set. Like the rainbow that you collect today, like if you want to collect the Prism Rainbow or the Select Rainbow, it exists because of this set. This was the first set where they had different colored parallels of the same card. There's a gold, a red, a blue. There's a premium stock red, which is the most rare, but none of them are numbered. They have established print runs. Like people know the print runs, and they're well known and established and trusted. But because it doesn't say out of 35 on there, people get nervous. But it hasn't mattered with the baseball set, but for some reason it has mattered with the football set. And that's why I get so excited about this set. I think it has so much potential because it's already blown up in baseball. And this is probably the number one. If there was a basketball set, this would be worth 10x product that exists. There's so many of those from the 90s where, like I think of the Crusade sets, like the Crusade Red Parallel is a big one out of 25, I think they are. Huge in baseball, big in football, but not as huge as baseball. But there's no basketball Crusade sets from the 90s that would take the other sports to a whole new level, right? Like we see with PMGs and rubies and stuff like that. It starts, as far as highest selling cards, it's basketball, usually Jordan, and then it's, you know, usually baseball and Griffey, and then it's usually football and Barry Sanders and Jerry Rice. So there's so much going for this set. But yeah, I think that does maybe deter people or just, I don't know if it confuses people. I don't know the right word there, but I think it would be a more accepted and established set if it was serial numbered on the card.
Yeah, the baseball call out, I always enjoy like when you look at similar products in two different sports and one's not doing what the other is doing. It always, to me, it's like, and I don't know anything about the baseball set, so don't listen to me, but I'm always like, those are the things that fascinate me. It's like, oh, maybe I should dig a layer or two deeper. Why aren't things happening the way they are? So those are always fun to think about. Moving over to your first card you have listed, and dude, what a card here. I'll let you take the reins and talk about why you posted it.
Yeah, it's the 2010 Topps Chrome Gold Refractor out of 50, Larry Fitzgerald PSA 9. I mean, aesthetically, just a gorgeous card. I love 2010 Topps Chrome. It's Fitzgerald's second Topps Chrome Gold Refractor. There was an 08 out of 199, and then there was like the subset. I think his is like a Pro Bowl subset. So he has two from 08, but there was no 09 Topps Chrome Gold in football. So this is actually the second, and there's no PSA 10. So this is the highest graded copy. It should only do maybe $200. Like, it's a very affordable card. I talked about it in my newsletter before, but I think Fitzgerald is one of those guys that's, I think he could have a Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones moment in the hobby in like 5 to 7 years, where people just, he's been gone, you know, a chunk of time, and people, you know, checking the all-time statistics and just see his name just peppered all over it and remember, like, he was freaking good, man. And he was so consistent, and he was a good dude, right? Like, he was never in any drama, like, always seemed like a stand-up guy, super easy to root for. But I mean, a couple hundred bucks on this card, like, very, very easy to justify card to add to your collection.
I love Larry Fitzgerald, one of the best receivers of that era. The card, I'm looking at it, and I love the 2010 Chrome. I think the photography is so amazing. He's getting tackled by someone on the Jaguars, and it just looks like he's eyeing his way to, like, break this tackle and move forward. His dreads are, like, kind of popping up in the back. He's got a firm grip on the ball. It's just a badass card. So if you like Larry Fitzgerald and you collect him, or maybe you're starting to collect him, this might be a good one to take a look at. Next one, we got Jeter. I don't know if we've talked about Jeter yet, but let's see.
I don't know. We're going to talk about him twice today, though.
So okay. All right. Start us off.
Yeah. So this is the 97 Topps Gallery of Heroes, Derek Jeter. It's a PSA 10. I believe this is the OG stained glass. We talked about the OG cracked ice before with the 98 Atomic, but from what I've gathered, this is the original kind of stained glass concept. It's relatively affordable, which is what I like about it. It's not super low pop. Like, usually these, you know, even the big names, PSA 10s, sometimes it can be three figure pops, but it makes it more affordable, and it's still a significant card. So I think, you know, it's an easy card to get into if you're trying to look at 90s stuff that, you know, is significant, but also affordable, probably a few hundred to maybe $500 card at most here. So very cool design, especially in hand. It's one of those cards in hand. It kind of, you know, doesn't do it justice with a scan.
As a non-baseball card collector, I feel like my exposure to certain baseball sets are through Derek Jeter cards, because they're often sold. There's a lot of Jeter collectors. So this is, I can confidently say, this is the first time I've ever seen this card, which is fun. Part of the fun of being able to do this show. And I guess we'll be hearing more about Jeter here in a minute. But before we get there, we got a cool card alert. Wow. I'll call it out because I'm looking at it. This is your pick. 2007 Topps Chrome Superfractor. Andre Iguodala, 1/1, PSA 7, like it matters. He's just above the rim. And he's got that Sixers jerseys on, which is super nostalgic. What do you want to talk about here besides how cool this card is?
Yeah, I mean, Topps Chrome Superfractors, like, if Iguodala, if you have any attachment, sentimental attachment to Iguodala, like, and you can afford this card, grab it. Like, Topps Chrome Superfractors, when they come up, grab them if you can. And I mean, this thing's sitting at $30. It's got 6 days left. It's going to get going. But, like, I mean, who knows? Maybe it goes for a relatively affordable number. The pose, like you said, is awesome. Like, Iguodala is one of those weird careers. Like, when he came in, he was pretty raw. I don't know if you remember. I think he came out as a sophomore at Arizona. It was, like, pretty raw, super athletic, really developed into a really good, like, first option in Philly, and then went to Denver, had some really good years, and then kind of became a role player later in his career with the Warriors. I mean, he won a finals MVP just for the way he guarded LeBron in the finals, which is kind of nuts, especially considering who was on his team, right? Steph Curry and the likes. Won 4 NBA titles, won an Olympic gold medal, won a FIBA gold medal, like, pretty decorated career. So, but one thing, you know, pretty cool about this is, he's from Springfield, Illinois, and I'm from Quincy, Illinois, which is an hour and a half from Springfield. I was a freshman when he was a senior. So we played them his senior year in the postseason, and I got to go and admire him at the high school level. And I will never forget the first shot he took was a corner three, and it just hit the side and top of the backboard. Like, he was such a bad shooter coming out of high school and in college. So to see him evolve in the NBA was pretty cool.
And looking at this card, it looks like just the net is gold. Like he's dunking into a gold net with the super factor finish. What I think is fun about cards like this is that you're going to get the super factor people. Like there's a group of people that are just looking at super factors all the time. You're going to get the Iguodala collectors, and you're going to get like the basketball collectors who are just like, can justify this purchase by saying, well, it fits into my like history of basketball collection because he won a finals MVP. So super cool card. I'm a big fan of always seeing cards that I never seen before. And we've got another one in this one. So let's move on to the final stretch of this. This is where we talk about cards that are being sent to Nick. Let's start with, this is a card I have seen plenty of times. Yes. I don't know if I've seen it in this grade. Maybe that's what you'll want to talk about, but I'll let you lead.
Yeah, man. So this is the 96 SI for kids, Tiger Woods, BGS 95. So you don't see many Gem Mint copies of this card. One thing I love about this is it's the old Beckett slab. So the subs are on the back of the label, which, you know, just gives some extra nostalgia to the card there and kind of really takes you to that era a little bit easier. I wasn't sure. So I asked my followers on Instagram when they switched to subgrades on the front, and consensus has told me in 2004. So this was definitely graded between 96 and 2004, which I think kind of adds a layer to this specific card, because so many of them were graded really in the COVID boom. This card kind of took off and a ton of these were graded, but I want to say there's still only around 100 BGS 95s. I'm going to look that up real quick, but I mean, we talked about this before, like when you think of golf, like you think of Tiger Woods, like it's like Jordan with basketball, but you know, there's no LeBron really in golf. So, I mean, it's just easy to justify Tiger Woods and his importance. But yeah, I looked up the pop. There's 106 BGS 95. So thousands of copies of this card. But when you narrow it down to the highest grades, pretty limited. So but I don't know about you. Did you do SI for kids when you were little? Like I remember getting those in, like I remember the posters in the middle, I would hang those up on my wall. I remember these cards coming in and ripping them out and just who knows where they ended up, but just so much nostalgia.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think, dude, not a week goes by that I don't see someone post some SI for kids card in their stories that's just in their collection. I think like there's something there with the nostalgia of that moment in time as a kid, and people see these cards. And to me, like, I don't collect these cards. I'm not really interested in collecting these cards, but I can understand like the chase for like the highest grade with the lowest population. And it is master season, and Tiger did a few cool things during that time. So I'm curious just how this one ends up just based on not overly abundant number of 95s, the old label, and the season of it all.
For sure. I think, you know, it'll probably do 4,000 range, but yeah, it's one of the bigger cards we have. And we have a lot of good stuff running this week. So, you know, a lot of big stuff too. So I was trying to pick kind of a variety of price points, which kind of takes us to these next two, which are, I included them together. It's a 2015 and a 2016 Damian Lillard Gold Prism PSA 10. So it's two separate cards. The 15 is a pop two, the 16 is a pop one. These don't surface often. Like you just rarely see these cards sell, period, let alone in PSA 10 condition. But these should be pretty affordable cards. And I think, you know, today is Monday. The Bucks just blew out the Suns yesterday without Giannis. Lillard had a huge game. They're a team in the East that I think could make some noise. Like I'm just not sold on the Celtics. Like they have a ton of talent, but I just don't trust them in the playoffs. Not that I trust the Bucks and Doc Rivers, but I think the East is open. And I think if you catch a hot Lillard and a locked in Giannis and Chris Middleton is now back in the lineup, like that's going to be a tough team to beat. So just an interesting time that these are selling, and curious kind of how these shake out as we get into the postseason.
Yeah, I'm a Gold Prism simp. I like Damian Lillard, although I have to like him a lot less since he's in the same division as my squad. I think the Bucks are coming around, and the record speaks for itself. It was a tough sledding when Doc came back, and I think it's when these trades happen, or when these team players move over and you know, they're trying, there's like a gelling period, right? Especially with two superstars. And although the Pacers have gotten the Bucks number most of the time this season, I'm not sure I'd want to play them in the playoffs with this kind of horsepower. So yeah, cool to see. I don't know, 2015 basketball prism and 2016, you just don't see it as much as some of the other stuff. So it's interesting that these two came to market at the same time, I'm assuming probably from the same seller, but cool cards nonetheless. All right, the next one. Here's our guy here, the captain.
Derek Jeter. This is the 1999 Finest Gold Refractor out of 100. Derek Jeter, PSA 9. This is the OG gold refractor, right? Like, we had people call a lot of different gold refractors that were gold in the 90s. They call them gold refractors. Like the 96 finest Kobe rookie refractor is gold, but it wasn't actually called a gold refractor. This was actually the first card that was called the gold refractor from a Topps release or a Premier release. And it's serial numbered out of 100, which is significant. PSA 9. So there's actually surprisingly a lot of these graded. There's 9 9s and 7 10s. So it's not like a super scarce high graded card, but they don't surface a ton, being limited to 100 copies. I believe this is like I guess they would call it a subset, because there's two versions of this. And this one has, you can see gems kind of written vertically on the right side there. There's like, some of them have what they call sterling on the side. Like, I don't know a ton about the different subsets, but the original copy, like the true copy of this, doesn't have gems. It's just a different pose, similar looking card, and it doesn't have gems on the side. So this one would probably sell a little bit less than the true, I guess. But still a very significant card. And just, you know, as I'm noticing, this is the second card we've included that kind of has the crinkle cut edges. The SI for kids was kind of more of a ripped out, you know, crinkle cut, and this was actually cut this way. So kind of interesting card.
Yes, the perforated edge. So when I look at this, I think about, I was trying to liken it to football, and I think about the 99 gold refractor Peyton. So there's there, then the football, you've got the regular one, and I think the other one says Sensations on the side.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So this must be that version in,
yes,
baseball.
You're right. Sterling was like the 96s, I think, or 97 finest refractors, and maybe just baseball.
There's something about, like, when I'm so into football cards, and then I see the other version, like see the baseball version, and it makes me just like want to dig more. I just want to go dig into 99 finest baseball and like compare and contrast and get nostalgic for a little bit. But Derek Jeter, for all you Derek Jeter fans, getting a lot of placement here on the show today. And some would say maybe best football player of all time. All the Brady fans would say, how dare you? But Jerry Rice, what do we got here?
I'll fight that fight. I am on the Jerry Rice is the greatest football of all time side, and I will fight that fight all day. It's a fun debate because Brady guys are very passionate, but we'll leave that debate for another time. But yeah, this is the 97.
Hit up Nick. Do not, even though I'm hosting, Hit up Nick. War sports card. Yeah, I don't need it. I don't need the smoke.
Jump into the DMs. We'll leave Brett out of this. But this is the 97 Pinnacle Totally Certified Platinum Gold out of 30. So this one is serial numbered out of 30. Jerry Rice BGS 85. So we talked about the 96 Select Certified Mirror Golds. This was the next year of that card. So the 96, it's still was made by Pinnacle, but they called it Select Certified. The 97 Pinnacle made it what they called Totally Certified. So it was a little bit different release, but it still had like the mirror parallels. Like there's a mirror gold of this that's not numbered, or it might be, or it's a lower print run. I forget. But the platinums are all serial numbered. And this is the platinum gold out of 30. And this card, like a BGS, this card should sell for $3,000 to $4,000. And if in the PSA 8 of the 96 certified mirror gold, Jerry Rice sold for around $2,000. And I think that's interesting because the 96 was obviously the first release. It's two totally different designs. So maybe people like the 97 design more. I'm not sure. But I think it's because the 97 is actually stamped with the serial number. I think there's your answer there. I think it's an easier one for people to just grab onto without having to really dig into the weeds, because they can see there's only 30 copies of this card. So it's a huge card, but yeah, I'm glad you brought that question up earlier, and I think this kind of answers it.
Awesome, cool looking card. There's some fun years in the late. This is a card in the late 90s that I am not too familiar with, but I think just goes to show how many fun cards there are during that time period. So let's close it out with, this guy's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, but I can't like not, I look at his cards and I always just think about Ace Ventura always. So
if you don't know that reference, go watch the original Ace Ventura, man. It's so true. Now that you bring that up, man. This is the 2007 exquisite maximum jersey, which is like a four window kind of quad jersey. We'll call it patch, although, you know, the technical people will get mad at me for calling it a patch, but it's out of five. There's only five of these, autograph card, game used, but it's an early exquisite, you know, of a legend. I think exquisite football started in 05, I believe. So this is a third year exquisite. It's a BGS 9 with the 10 auto. And I mean, Marino is one of those dudes that he's one of like the all time, if he had a championship kind of guys, because I think talent wise, like especially the people that got to watch him actually play when he was active and not just highlights, like he was ahead of the game, man. He had a cannon arm, like was putting up stats that were unheard of at the time. Just a fascinating player. If he would have won a title or two, I think his market would be, he would be totally different as a player, the way he was viewed in the hobby.
100%. Peyton Manning often says outside of his dad, Marino was his favorite quarterback to watch. So always some street cred there as a Peyton guy myself. But yeah, I just remember like being a kid and being nostalgic, and like there was the Colts and the Dolphins were both in the same division, the AFC East, when I was growing up, and it was just always, they were the kings of the mountain in that division. And Marino was always just so fun to watch. So we're under 90 minutes. We did it, yes. Nick. We covered a lot of ground. Auction talk, having a blast. If you're interested in consigning your cards with Nick, hit him up. Easy to reach. You can also hit my the link in the show notes, Stacking 50, $50 off your first consignment with Nick. But we'll be back here again before you know it. Nick, man, thank you. Appreciate the time.
Another fun week, man. Excited for the next one.
Nick is a fun partner in crime with these. We talked about a ton of cards. I love looking back. I love looking forward. All the things in between. There are so many cards that are coming at us on a regular basis, so it is nice to take a moment, take a step back, and talk about them. Hopefully you're enjoying these conversations as much as I'm enjoying having them. You take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. We got a collector conversation coming at you Friday. Talk soon.